It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, we are your public radio station here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 55 degrees under a light rain fog slash mist. Out at the airport, they have 96% humidity, east winds to 9, and a mere 2.5 miles of visibility. Coming up on the Midday Report, residents in the Menashka Bay Road area may be hearing large blasts in the future, but it might be saving the borough millions of dollars. A Kodiak man is sentenced to federal prison for the production of child pornography. Charges have been dropped against the man originally charged in the fire that killed three over the weekend in Bethel. And Alaska may have a new airways, Aleutian Airways reports it's been approved to start flying. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A Michigan judge is blocking Republican prosecutors in Macomb, Kent, and Jackson counties from enforcing a 1931 law that bans nearly all abortions and could expose providers to criminal prosecution. The law was triggered when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned a 1973 ruling that legalized abortion nationwide. In his ruling today, Oakland County Circuit Judge Jacob Cunningham says the decision should rest with voters.
This court finds it is overwhelmingly in the public's interest to let the people of the great state of Michigan decide this matter at the ballot box, assuming the constitutional amendment initiative is on the ballot on November 8th.
Abortion rights is a prominent issue in the reelection campaigns of Michigan's Democratic governor and attorney general. A British man's been sentenced in U.S. District Court to life in prison for his role in the deaths of four American hostages captured by ISIS. Al-Shafi al-Sheikh learned his fate at his hearing in Northern Virginia today. The first assistant U.S. attorney, Raj Parekh, said this prosecution, quote, unmasked the vicious and sadistic men dubbed by their captors the Beatles because of their British accents. Prosecutors say al-Sheikh is the highest-ranking member of the group to be convicted in U.S. court. Writers are expressing solidarity with the famed 75-year-old author Salman Rushdie, who is currently hospitalized with severe stab wounds from an attack at the Chautauqua Institution in New York last week. NPR's Elizabeth Blair reports that today on the steps of the New York Public Library, more than a dozen writers read excerpts from Rushdie's work.
Poet Reginald Dwayne Betts read from The Power of the Pen.
When a reader falls in love with a book, it leaves its essence inside him.
Rushdie was forced to spend years in hiding after Iran's leader accused him of blasphemy and called for his death. In more recent years, Rushdie has been a staunch defender of free speech. Comedian Asif Manvi read from Rushdie's forthcoming novel, Victory City.
All that remains is the city of words. Words are the only victors.
The head of PEN America, which co-organized the event, told the audience not even a blade to the throat could still the voice of Salman Rushdie. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
U.S. stocks closed lower today as investors try to parse mixed signals on interest rates. NPR's Scott Horsley has more.
Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell is set to address an annual economic meeting in Jackson Hole, Wyoming next week. Investors will be listening for any hints about the size of future interest rate hikes. The Fed's expected to keep raising rates as it tries to curb inflation, but the central bank doesn't want to move too fast and risk tipping the economy into recession. Foot Locker's profits outran analyst expectations for the most recent quarter, and stock in the sporting goods retailer moved higher. Foot Locker also named Mary Dillon as its new CEO. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
From Washington, this is NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Residents living in the Menashka Bay Road area of Kodiak may soon hear large explosions at the landfill. KMXT's Dylan Simard reports it's part of a plan to save the borough millions of dollars over the next decade.
Contractors will be boring holes into some areas around the landfill and filling them with powerful explosives, which will be detonated electronically. The goal is to free up an enormous amount of gravel to be used by the landfill. The borough has two options for acquiring gravel. It can either spend millions of dollars over the next decade to get it trucked in from Bell's Flats or Near Island, or it can generate 10 years' worth of gravel at the landfill, with some help from explosives, and at a fraction of the cost. Dave Conrad is the Director of Engineering and Facilities for the Kodiak Island Borough and the borough's interim manager.
We're initially only going to blast about 20,000 cubic yards, and that is for the closure project that Brecken is doing currently. After that, there'll be basically about 90,000 cubic yards or about 10 years, 9 to 10 years of rock, depending on if we have to build other roadways to get to areas that we dump waste.
When an area the landfill fills up with waste to a certain level, it needs to be covered with an impermeable layer. That's typically a mix of synthetic material and gravel or soil over the top. And Conrad says there's statutes that regulate exactly how much gravel needs to be used.
The permit requires that when you bury municipal solid waste, i.e. trash, that it be covered with 6 inches of gravel material.
To create enough gravel, there will be a series of detonations between now and October, pausing over the winter season and wrapping up in spring or summer of next year. These blastings at the landfill were occurring almost every other year as recently as 2012. Following the lateral expansion of the landfill, the blastings stopped due to an abundance of gravel freed up during the project. The blastings are currently scheduled for shortly after 5 p.m. when the landfill is closed, as early as Friday or Saturday, depending on the availability of the contractors. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
A Kodiak man was sentenced to 18 years in federal prison on Wednesday for the production of child pornography. Vince Delgan, now 20 years old, was arrested in May of last year on state charges and indicted on 3 federal charges in November. He pleaded guilty to 1 count of production of child pornography in February. The state charges were dropped as part of his plea agreement. According to court documents, Delgan used a fake social media account to contact and obtain explicit photos from a teenager at Kodiak High School. He had previously been a student at the school and remained the volleyball team's volunteer manager after graduating. Delgan used the photos to blackmail the victim into meeting with him and sexually assaulted him on 3 separate occasions. He recorded the assaults and attempted to use the videos to continue blackmailing the victim into a 4th meeting when authorities were alerted of the abuse. In a Department of Justice press release, U.S. Attorney for the District of Alaska S. Lane Tucker characterized Delgan's behavior as relentless, aggressive, and disturbing, and said the ordeal has caused the victim and his family significant emotional trauma. Delgan was also sentenced to a lifetime of supervised release when he leaves prison and to pay more than $13,000 in restitution. Anyone with information about the physical or online exploitation of children is encouraged to contact the FBI. Their number is 1-800-CALL-FBI. All charges have been dropped against Adam Andrew, the person originally charged in the fire that killed 3 at an apartment complex in Bethel. Andrew had been charged with 3 counts of murder in the second degree and 1 count of arson, and an additional 7 felonies and 6 misdemeanors. According to court documents, Bethel Police Department investigator Skylar Smith had relied on the testimony of just 1 15-year-old eyewitness who said he saw Andrew start the fire. The fire started last Friday at about 4 a.m. The prosecutor for the case, Chris Knowles, would not say whether the fire was still being investigated as arson or whether they are looking at other causes. However, he did say that there is still an active investigation and that the Bethel Police Department is still following all leads. The Federal Aviation Administration has approved Aleutian Airways to begin flying in Alaska, according to a statement from the airline Thursday morning. They say they are cleared for flights to Cold Bay, King Salmon, and Dillingham, but are still awaiting FAA approval to land in Dutch Harbor and Sand Point. When fully approved, the airline would service Unalaska and other Alaska communities with Saab 2000 planes, the same kind of aircraft involved in a fatal crash in Unalaska in 2019. Aleutian Airways delayed its original 2021 launch, saying it was studying safety recommendations after that fatal crash, but says they have now successfully completed all FAA requirements to safely begin operations. A landslide warning system developed in Sitka is now available to the public as an online app, and work is underway to export the project to other communities in southeast Alaska. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this report.
Lisa Bush is the director of the Sitka Sound Science Center, which spearheaded the project. Bush is a 35-year resident of Sitka, and landslides were not on her radar until a very bad day 7 years ago.
So this project got started in 2015 when we had a deadly landslide that killed our friends and family. And I can say that I've been here 35 years and just never thought about landslides until then as a big worry. Mostly we worried about tsunamis. And all of a sudden, people had lots of concerns and lots of questions.
What emerged from that disaster on August 18, 2015, was an interdisciplinary research program funded by a $2 million grant from the National Science Foundation. Partners ranged from the RAND Corporation, which did social science, to the U.S. Geological Survey and the National Weather Service, which collected hard data, to the Sitka Tribe of Alaska, which gathered oral histories. In all, there were 30 scientists and university researchers on the team. Bush said the final product had to serve a unique purpose, to give people enough information on if and when to act.
People said to us, and I think this is very Alaskan, they wanted to make their own decisions. They wanted a digital dashboard that where they could go and look at the risk and then make their own choices about if they should evacuate.
This is intentionally different from the tsunami warning system, which issues loud and insistent orders to evacuate and is more or less binary. A big earthquake occurs and a tsunami is either there or it's not. Landslides are the result of factors that are cumulative, in particular, how much rain has fallen or is expected to fall in a 3-hour period. And unlike tsunamis, the landslide risk is not shared equally across town.
We looked at where are the more landslide-prone areas and where what part of Sitka is really most prone to landslides. And by the way, it's not the whole town. It's about 10% of our community. So when the landslides first happened, everybody said, well, we're all in a landslide zone. Well, that's not true. About 10% of homes are in landslide areas.
The Sitka Landslide Warning App is a web app which opens in a web browser. It shows low, medium, and high risk and generates a curve based on current conditions plus the forecast to anticipate risk up to 3 days into the future. It's got recommendations on how to evaluate the information based on where you live and what you should do if you decide to leave your home. The app is still being fine-tuned. Emergency planners hope to create messaging to help residents manage landslide risk moving forward.
What the emergency response people would like is for you to find a buddy system. So my house maybe is close to the water, and so I'm more prone to being hit by tsunamis. And my friend's house is someplace else where I can go when there's a tsunami warning. And then when there's a landslide warning, my friend can come down to my house and be in my safe house. And so we're saying, you know, uphill for tsunamis, downhill for a landslide.
Sitka is just the beginning for what Bush hopes becomes a regional landslide warning system. Work is already in progress to create similar warning systems in Hoonah, Skagway, Klukwan, Craig, Kasan, and Yakutat. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
President Joe Biden signed the Democrats' tax and climate package, known as the Inflation Reduction Act, into law this week. Among the law's key provisions are a $7,500 tax credit for new electric vehicles, but only if the cobalt, graphite, and other minerals in the EV's batteries come from domestic or friendly sources. And as KRBD's Eric Stone reports, that provision and others in the bill could spur mine development in Alaska.
The Inflation Reduction Act offers $7,500 tax credits for people who buy new electric vehicles. But as Patty Ryan of the Atlantic Council's Global Energy Center explains, there's a pretty big catch.
there are about zero cars on the U.S. market today that could potentially qualify for these credits.
That's because starting in 2024, 40% of the metals used in electric vehicle battery production, including cobalt, manganese, nickel, lithium, and graphite, have to either be extracted or processed in the U.S. or a friendly country to qualify for the credit. That figure moves to 80% by 2027. And none can come from so-called foreign entities of concern. That's diplomat ease for China and Russia.
So essentially, the supply chain implications are the real story.
Most of the lithium used in the lithium-ion batteries that go into EVs comes from Australia and Chile, says economist Brett Watson at the University of Alaska Anchorage's Institute of Social and Economic Research.
So those will qualify under the tax credit provisions, which require sourcing materials from nations that have a free trade agreement with the United States, which both of those nations do.
But that's not the case for some of the other minerals used in batteries.
Cobalt, on the other hand, is mostly sourced from the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
The U.S. doesn't have a free trade agreement with the Congo, and that means EV manufacturers will have to source their cobalt elsewhere, maybe from recycling, or maybe from Alaska.
Cobalt is being prospected right now from the Ambler District.
That's a mining prospect in northwest Alaska. Whether it'll turn into a mine is far from a sure bet. The project has been mired in controversy for years. But the company hoping to develop the Ambler Mining District sees the Inflation Reduction Act as an encouraging sign, and not just because of the tax credits for cobalt. Ambler Metals President and CEO Ramzi Fawaz says the Inflation Reduction Act's tax credits for advanced manufacturing are more important to his project in the short term.
And what it boils down to is the companies that are in mining and they can write off 10% of the cost of their operations if they produce one single critical mineral.
There's a long list of minerals that qualify, from aluminum to zinc.
Our first project will be called the Arctic Project. And once we make a decision to invest and start construction, the mine will operate and mainly produce copper and zinc and other metals sometime in the late 20s.
Cobalt production from the so-called bornite deposit would start much later. But will the Inflation Reduction Act's tax credits be enough to move the needle towards actually getting a mine built?
It's a complex question, of course, because it does help for sure, but there are so many factors in realizing a project like ours.
Like, for example, whether a planned 200-plus-mile road to the mining district will move forward. The state's investment agency has poured millions into efforts to build the road, but the project stalled in February after the Biden administration said an environmental analysis of the road was flawed. The push for more domestic minerals to support green technology could have far-reaching effects all over the state. Watson, the economist, points to a prospect called Graphite One outside Nome as another potential beneficiary of the Inflation Reduction Act's electric vehicle tax credit. And in Southeast, he says the advanced manufacturing credit could make development of a rare earth mine on Prince of Wales Island and a processing facility planned for the Ketchikan area an easier sell.
You could imagine that facility in Ketchikan applying for that advanced manufacturing tax credit. So there's something in the bill potentially for the Ketchikan Boken Ridge facility as well.
But Watson says what would truly move the needle is a bill that would reform the sometimes decades-long permitting process to get the mines built. That's reportedly part of the deal that created the Inflation Reduction Act, but no bill has been filed in Congress yet. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Read diverse, read indie on Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. Author Palmer Pickering's book, Moon Deeds, revolves around 20-year-old twins Cassidy and Tor, who must save Earth from a ruthless enemy at a time when the only force more powerful than alien technology is magic. Moon Deeds launches the siblings' journey across the galaxy, where they must learn their power as the Star Children, claim their shamanic heritage, and battle dark forces that threaten humankind. We spoke with her about this addictive installment in the Star Children saga.
I work in high tech. It gave me some confidence in understanding how to research in order to write science fiction in a way that I feel confident about. And a lot of it has to do with researching and fact-checking and talking to experts in order to make sure that it makes sense. And that comes into a lot of different realms. There's a military aspect of Moon Deeds, and I'm not in the military, and so I got some readers. I got an Army Ranger to be a beta reader. So writing is a lot of fun for me. It requires research, and my background has definitely helped. The gaming aspect, gaming is all fantasy. Basically, you're creating, it's all world building, right? It's world building, it's plot, it's character development. The good games, I like games with characters who you feel attached to. So it's all storytelling in just a different genre, basically, a different form.
That was author Palmer Pickering on her new book, Moon Deeds, and its sequel, Light Fighters, which has just been released. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
The polls have closed on the August 16th primary election. Preliminary results have been released online by the Alaska Division of Elections. Final results will not be posted until Wednesday, August 31st, giving time for all ballots postmarked by Election Day to be counted, including mail ballots from rural Alaska, from college students in the lower 48, and from Alaskans serving in our military abroad. This message sponsored by Alaskans for Better Elections.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Friday. It is the 19th day of August, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 6:42. It will set again at 9:41. That will give us 14 hours and 59 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 44 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 41 degrees, set in 2012, and our record high was 74, set in 1995. Currently 55 degrees. It's been 55 most of the day. We have a light rain fog mist at the airport, east winds to 9, 2.5 miles of visibility is all. The Weather Service is calling for rain for today, tonight, Saturday, Saturday night, Sunday, Sunday night. I'll just stop there. High near 55 today, southeast winds to 15. Those southeast winds are expected to continue through Saturday night at about 15. Low around 54 overnight, high near 57 tomorrow, low around 54 overnight on Saturday. So this weather is expected to continue for the next couple of days. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here this afternoon at 1:34 p.m. here on the east side. That will be a 3-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 8:11 p.m. of 7.7 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 2:09 this afternoon, a 4.8-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 8:36 p.m. of 11.8 feet. Let's hear what the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has to say in their recent announcement.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 28. Date issued 10 a.m. on August 19th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Saturday, August 20th, until 6 p.m. Monday, August 22nd in the following areas. In the Duck Bay, Iseuit Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, Raspberry Strait, southeast of Fog Neck, and northeast of Fog Neck sections of the Fog Neck District. The east side Kodiak District, except for the inner Ugak and outer Ugak Bay sections, remain closed. The Cape Alitak, Humpy Dead Man, Alitak Bay, Mosher Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District, the Outer Aikuluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, and the Cape Igvac, Wide Bay, Alinchak Bay, Katmai, and Dakavak Bay sections of the Mainland District. There will be a 30-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Saturday, August 20th, until 6 p.m. Sunday, August 21st, in the Inner Katoy Bay section of the Afognak District. There will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 6 p.m. Saturday, August 20th, until 6 p.m. Monday, August 22nd, in the following areas: in the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District and the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District. Closed waters are expanded until 6 p.m. Monday, August 22nd, at Molina Creek to consist of all those waters within 1/2 nautical mile of the beach near the terminus of Molina Creek, stream number 251-105, between 58 degrees 10 north latitude and 58 degrees 11 north latitude. Closed waters will be reduced in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located in Little Katoy and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252-323 and 252-324. As previously announced, fishermen were reminded that until further notice, in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak districts, south of a latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Mariners, be aware we have a small craft advisory through Saturday for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. For today, southeast 25, seas to 8 feet. South 20 tonight, seas to 8 feet. And southeast 25 tomorrow, seas to 8 feet, building to 9 feet tomorrow night. Over in the Shelikof Strait, east 20 today, seas to 4 feet. East 15 tomorrow, seas to 4 feet. For Saturday night, east 20, seas to 5 feet, and for Sunday in the Shelikof, northeast 30, seas to 8 feet. We have one personal message. Happy 40th birthday, Shay. Your mother loves you. The Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center Ticket by Donation fundraising concert is this Sunday at the fairgrounds. That starts at 2 p.m. Gates open at 1:30. It's a no-alcohol, family-friendly event, and it features Ellamy Tiller and the Twang, Home Brew, and Mary Brett. Tickets can be purchased at the gate with cash or check. It's just a donation as you see fit. Again, that's Sunday, 2 p.m. at the State Fairgrounds. Notice is hereby given. The Board of Education's regular meeting will occur next Monday at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, that is room F-140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will also be streamed through BlueJeans, and login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District's website. Look under the Board of Education tab. For more information, call the Secretary to the Board of Education at 907-486-7566. And the Kodiak City Council will be having a work session on Tuesday and their regular meeting on Thursday of next week. Both meetings begin at 7:30 p.m. and will be held in the public library. The public is encouraged to attend or tune in here at KMXT on 100.1 FM.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the August 19th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Anyone else feel like the rains of October came a wee bit early this year? The good news is that the rivers and streams are full, and salmon should have a clear pathway to their spawning spots. The pinks are filling the rivers, a little later than normal, but in pretty good numbers, and the bears are happy the fish are rolling in, too. A few of the treasured silver salmon have started to show up as well, and that makes fishermen and consumers of fish happy. Lots of sunspot activity this week, which translates into coronal mass ejections, pushing solar winds toward the Earth. These solar winds sometimes mean aurora activity over Kodiak. Solar activity is cyclical, on a fairly predictable 11-year cycle. The cycle goes from solar minimum to solar maximum and back. During solar minimum, there are very few sunspots in a year's time. During solar maximum, there are many, many sunspots. 2025 will be the solar maximum in this particular cycle. What does that mean? Many things, really. But for me, the most important is that aurora viewing is just going to get better and better over the next 3 years. Stay tuned for more info on how you can enjoy those magical lights this fall and winter. Sunday at 2 p.m. out at the fairgrounds, you can enjoy some great music for a good cause. Ellamy Tiller and Twang, Home Brew, and Mary Brett will be performing at the family-friendly event. Tickets are available at the gate, cash or check only, please. And the cost? Well, that's up to you. Tickets are by donation. All money raised will go to benefit Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center. So head on out to the fairgrounds on Sunday for some awesome music and to help a good cause. Gates open at 1:30 and the music starts at 2:00. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.